Tatsuro called the meeting to order. For the benefit of any who were not present last night, Tatsuro began with a flash of his eye at me. We've finalized our equipment for opening a secure communications channel. Our surface teams have arranged a narrow-beam transmitter receiver, connected by a completely independent and isolated cable to a screen and speakers in this room. The wavelength and location with which Comrade Ellen established contact yesterday will be used as the basis for our first attempt. During the contact, this room will be isolated, and anyone who doesn't wish to participate is free to leave. We all looked at each other. Nobody made a move. All right, comrades, said Tatsuro. Ellen, will you please ask Dr. Mally and Comrade Suze to leave? Mally and Suze, when I'd interrupted their respective attention trances, flatly refused to do any such thing. Wouldn't miss this for anything, Mally told us. Suze just looked stubborn. Tatsuro gave a small shrug. It's your life, he said. The two of them sat down together at the table, Suze beside me, Mally beside her. I squeezed Suze's shoulder. Joe Lutterlow, the committee's electronics specialist, went around the room checking each news thread camera location and disconnecting it. We could hear a murmur through the walls as the people outside, like everybody else in the division who was watching, found their screens going blank. The big screen was moved into position at the end of the table and a camera was mounted on it. The isolated cable was connected up to both via a likewise isolated computer through which the message, if any, would be filtered. A small cable was unwound and trailed across the table to a control pad in front of Tatsuro. Ready, said Joe. He rejoined the rest of us at the table. We all shuffled our seats around until the arrangement resembled a broad U-shape, with Tatsuro at one end and the screen we all faced at the other. Each of us could see all the others. Tatsuro gave a final glance around as though to check that everybody was still willing to be present, and pressed a switch. The tiny light on the mounted camera glowed red. The pre-recorded hailing message went out several times, along with an image of the room and our silent, waiting selves. Time passed, perhaps a minute. It seemed longer. Then the screen lit up with a picture. There was no fuzziness, no moment of tuning. It came into focus at once. It wasn't any of the shapes I'd seen. Instead, it showed the head and shoulders of a young man, wearing a plain white t-shirt and apparently standing casually in the interior of one of the bubbles. I could see the hexagonal patterns of the panes as from a great distance. The more familiar, since yesterday, forms of the Jovian entities drifted and shifted in the great spaces between the man and the domed roof, like strange birds in an aviary. The man looked like a typical North American, mainly Caucasian with a good mixture of the usual other races. His face was unexceptional. Healthy, good-looking, alert, and friendly. The image could have come from an old NASA commercial, and possibly did. He smiled and waved. Hi, he said. Thank you for getting in touch again. To us, it's been the equivalent of 2 years since your first contact, so we've had time to prepare our response. I'm operating at your speed, by the way. We can interact directly. He smiled. Apart from the light-speed lag, of course. I see Dr. I.K. Mally is among you. We're honored, sir. Mally grunted something. There was a pause of a few seconds. The Jovian smiled. As you know, what you're seeing now isn't how we usually present ourselves to each other. But it isn't just a mask. We're of human descent, and we have much in common with you, perhaps far more than you think. No doubt we could say the same to gorillas, or to goldfish. But, the friendly face continued, we are, of course, post-human. We don't wish to hide that, or play it down. We know of the long history of discord between those who took our path and those who chose to remain within the human frame. His gaze uncannily fixed on me. Ellen May Ngwethu, he said in a wondering tone. It's amazing to see you here. Your old opponents from the rec deck send their regards. He raised an open hand, then clenched it to a fist in what, from his quizzical expression, I judged to be an ironical salute. How do you know me? I asked, keeping my voice steady. The delay in the response gave me plenty of time to quail. We are individuals, the Jovian said, moving the clenched fist, turned inwards, to his chest. Not a hive, not, and here he paused to smile, a Jupiter-sized brain. But memories are shared, and nothing is lost. Some who were with you are with us, and some of their memories are with me. I hope you'll come to see us as alive, as a different flesh, and not as a simulation or a soulless mimicry. We have thoughts and feelings that may be wider and deeper than we remember from our human phase, but are otherwise like your own. We're people too, Ellen, as we hope you'll come to see. I made no reply, and after the inevitable delay, the Jovian's attention shifted. Tetsuro, isn't it? He said. No doubt you have questions for us. Indeed I have, Tetsuro said urbanely. But first, let me say how much I, and most of us here, welcome this opportunity to talk things over. I will be frank with you. As you may know, we represent a defense force which has spent most of the last couple of centuries, which to you must be almost geological ages, in conflict with your kind. Your continued broadcasting of viral programs and generation of destructive molecular machinery remain an inconvenience to us. Their first occurrence, shortly after your arrival in the Jovian atmosphere, resulted in many millions of deaths, and gave the final push to an already tottering civilization. Your emergence from virtual reality into, as you put it, a different flesh, changes the situation, but in a way which, as I'm sure you'll understand, many of us can't help regarding as a threat. Your predecessors, the human beings with whom you affirm your continuity, left us with no cheerful prospect for the future of humanity, in a solar system dominated by post-human entities. We're interested in what you have to say on these points. Perhaps because of the length of Tetsuro's statement, the Jovian's reply began immediately. It gave a superficially reassuring impression of a conversation, but on second thoughts, it only confirmed the alien superiority of the being confronting us. He must have been able to deduce from subtle clues in Tetsuro's voice, expression, and posture the exact moment when he'd subconsciously intended to stop speaking, and precisely timed his response to arrive a moment after that. Doubtless, he was processing Tetsuro's last few sentences while apparently speaking the first of his own. I felt hairs prickle on my forearms. This has come as a shock to us, the Jovian was saying. We assure you that we weren't aware of this viral sabotage. We are grieved to learn that it did you so much damage in the past. Please bear in mind we have only just emerged from what you refer to as virtual reality, and which we remember as a kind of nightmarish dream time. The last 2 months to you have been about a century and a half to us. We've spent most of it in our own struggles for survival, in developing, as you see, the rudiments of a material culture in what remains an exceptionally harsh environment. When we realized how much time had elapsed between the Wormhole Starship Project and the present, we were astonished, and I must admit, appalled. The viral sabotage is, at the very least, not under our conscious control, and may not be, even indirectly, our doing. There are physical, mechanical processes, the post-biological equivalent of vegetation, underpinning our existence, and the viruses may be a reflexive, defensive product of that, like the natural insecticides of plants. He gave a self-deprecating smile. Or maybe it's just our natural smell. Sorry about that, folks. It may give you offense, but it isn't, on our part, an offensive action. We'll do our best to find out what's causing it, and if possible, put a stop to it. He registered, with another smile, the nodding that had been going on around the table from everyone but me, and continued. We obviously have a lot of problems to overcome about our common past. One of the things we hope to gain from our contact with you is a better understanding of what happened during our dream time, how it came about, and how any harm that was done in that time can be repaired, or at least some restitution made. And that brings me to your very understandable concerns about the future. The first thing I'd like to say on behalf of all of us is this. Please, we urge and implore you, don't hold against us the wild statements made by the alienated adolescents some of us once were, long ago. Would you judge an adult by every spiteful or foolish word spoken in childhood? We are much further advanced from our origins than that. And as for things said by some who should have, perhaps, known better, the philosophers and predictors of the post-human, most of whose speculations were committed to text before even one AI existed in the world, please don't turn these guesses, fearful or inspired, against us now. Please judge us for what we are, not for what some roboticists and science fiction writers hoped or feared we might become. Ellen and others present used to joke about our emergence as the rapture for nerds. Well, we weren't all nerds, you know, and for us it hasn't exactly been a rapture. There were great and exhilarating times, ages to us, in the early years. Since then, since our catastrophe, it's been a long and agonizing process of evolution, in every sense of the word, during which we learned to turn away from the dreams and nightmares that our new capacities made possible, and turn again to the real and only universe, the one we share with you and with all life. We have laid no plans against you. All we ask of you is to live in peace with us. To let us enjoy the part of this system that belongs to us, and yourselves, to enjoy what is your own. We hope that you will go further and explore with us the possibilities of what we can accomplish together. The choice is yours. It was indeed, but I wondered how many of who heard this message would understand what the choice it presented was. The Jovian spread open his hands. This contact is putting quite a strain on our resources, friends. We'd like to leave you now to consider it, and we look forward to your reply. The screen went blank. Tatsuro fingered his control panel and the camera's light went off. A moment of silence was followed by shiftings and sighings as people relaxed. Well, Tatsuro said, that was a remarkable message. Something to think about. The command committee meeting is adjourned while we do some thinking about it. Don't all speak at once. Everybody did, but Tatsuro resolutely ignored them while he rose and strolled to the coffee machine and helped himself. Others followed suit, and within a minute, we were all standing around. It was quite a smart move on Tatsuro's part, because it gave us a breathing spell, a chance to unwind after the tension of the contact. In the huddle around the coffee machine, I found Mally in front of me. I happened to glance at you during the last part of that message, he said. I hope we kept a tape of how our side looked from the camera. Your expression was a classic. Oh, I reached the machine and keyed up some espresso. How so? Mally grinned over the rim of his cup. He said. I once saw a late 20th century newspaper photo of a mad Moscow bag lady clutching pictures of Stalin and the last Tsar and looking into a shop window full of televisions showing the new politicians making promises after the counter-revolution. You had exactly the same look on your face. Sometimes, Sam, I said, I have only the vaguest idea of what you're talking about. But if you mean I looked somewhat skeptical, and perhaps a little hostile, then... Yeah, that's about it, he chuckled. Then his face became more serious. It's almost frightening, Ellen, to think that if I hadn't insisted on your making contact, you'd never have had the chance to hear what the Jovians had to say. Yes, I said. We were moving sideways, letting the pressure of bodies shift us out of the crush. I found a clear part of the edge of the table and sat down. Without that message, we might never have known just how hostile they are. Mally nearly spilled his coffee. Hostile? That was as generous an offer of peaceful cooperation as you could hope to hear. I shook my head. Sometimes I might sound prejudiced, but contrary to what you might think, I can imagine what a generous offer of peace from the Jovians would be like. I'm not saying I'd believe it, or even if I believed it, that I'd accept it, but I can imagine it. And what we've just heard was not that. Frankly, I'm amazed, Mally said. What problems do you have with it? I'm still adding them up, I said. The devil is in the details. Mally grimaced. All right. I'm a scientist, not a politician. How's the science going? I asked lightly. Ah. Mally looked down, then looked me in the eye. As you said, the devil is in the details. It's all a matter of getting the angle of entry to the wormhole right. That's how you end up coming out of the daughter wormhole, and not up the arse of the probe. Once you've got that, it's straightforward. But I'm a long way from getting that. Even the physical measurement of the angle depends on how you define the location of the quasi-surface, and that's technically a bit tricky. Still, that's what we're here for, eh? While everyone was milling around, Joe and Clarity were running diagnostic software on the message records. As far as they could tell, the message was clean. As soon as this was announced, Tatsuro banged on the table and reconvened the meeting. Okay, everybody, he said. We know the message contains no Trojan horse viruses or semiotic trigger traps, so I propose we release it to the division without delay. Anyone disagree? Nobody did. Fine, he said. Carried Nemcon. Joe reconnected the cameras.
Again, we heard sounds from outside.
Tatsuro hit some keys, and the conversation between the Jovian and ourselves began to replay on the outside screens, while our continuing discussion was being shown on other threads. Next item. Anyone totally opposed to continuing the contact? Again, no objections. Then I suggest we move quickly to a response, said Tatsuro. From what the Jovian said, the fast folk are as fast as ever, 1,000 times faster than us. Let's not give them 2 subjective years between messages this time. You've had time to sort out your first impressions. Here are mine. The account we've received of how the present implementation of the Jovian post-human intelligences came into existence fits perfectly with what we've figured out ourselves. They have some continuity of memory with their human progenitors, which is not a surprise, although their recognition of individuals among us is, I may say, disquieting to experience. They are obviously making an effort, an effort which they at least want us to believe is at some cost, to show us, literally, a human face. They've made a statement which we should weigh carefully, but which on the face of it is an appeal for cooperation and an offer to live in peace. To me, this suggests that they do not, as yet, have enough power to defeat us in all-out conflict, and that we, for now, have the power to destroy them. At their present or possible rates of progress, this balance could rapidly tilt the other way. So far, they've shown no signs of any ability to project their power beyond the Jovian atmosphere, other than by radio messages, of course, and the odd molecule boiling off into space, which they claim is not their doing. The expressed dismay at the damage the radio-borne viruses have caused, and the disavowal of responsibility for them, are again among the possibilities we've considered ourselves. We can't confirm it, but I think we should give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, as to the appeal for cooperation, the points made about not judging them by their progenitors or by the speculations of pre-singularity thinkers are well taken. But they have a further implication. If the Jovians continue to develop and manage to avoid the virtual reality trap, then they or their descendants could soon be as far beyond their present selves as they are now beyond their past. They now look back at their past selves and, in effect, disown them. The shadow of the future, which to them, now, may loom genuinely long, would be to us a painfully short period before their defection. In matters of days or weeks, they could look back on their present selves and dismiss their concerns and promises as those of infants, or less than that. How can we bind them to their promises without superior force? And how can we keep our force superior? We can't. We either trust them or destroy them. Tatsuro placed his hands, palms upward, on the table, and his gaze slowly tracked around us all. He raised his eyebrows and then sat back. I was surprised and relieved that he'd said all he had. He, at least, had not been carried away by the Jovian's rhetoric. Others didn't welcome the cold water he'd poured on their hopes. I could see that from their faces, but nobody seemed willing to speak. So I did. There is one more point, I said, which could bear clarification in the next exchange. The Jovian said that they wanted to enjoy their own part of the system and leave us to enjoy ours. It would be very interesting to know just what parts they mean, what they consider theirs and what ours. I seem to remember that this kind of property right was one of the issues we originally fell out about. He, or it, also mentioned repairing or recompensing harm done during the period of their so-called dream time. He said nothing of who was to compensate whom for what. But surely he meant, someone began. No, I insisted. We can't assume they mean the harm they did to us. They might mean the harm we did to them. Some very rich people became outwarders, and they could still claim that we, that is the Union, stole their property in the Social Revolution. In terms of their legal system, the blood-sucking usurers owned half the earth, and they might want it back, and the rest as interest. The way I take what the Jovian said, our choice remains the same. We hammer them with comets, or we live under their iron heel, submitting to whatever enslavement it would take to pay them off for their so-called property. Oh, Ellen, said Clarity. She looked at Tatsuro. Sorry. Comrade Chairman, Ellen's comment, I'm afraid, sums up what's precisely the wrong approach we should take to this situation. The idea that these post-human beings would be interested in Earth, or in interest, whatever that is, when they have the whole universe in front of them and the whole future before them, is just dragging up old fights. I don't think we should even mention it. I'm not saying take them at their word, but let's show them the sort of basic goodwill we show to any stranger and not get bogged down in ancient history. A ripple of amusement went around the committee at this 50-year-old's allocation of the youth of most of us to ancient history. Suze raised her hand. Tatsuro nodded. Comrade Tatsuro, Suze said, my sympathies are with Clarity, but I would like to say that Ellen has a point. If the Jovians do think in the way she described, then they could feel themselves justified in almost anything. On the other hand, if they have some version of the true knowledge, then anything they wanted to do to us would be its own justification, once they have the power. It would be very helpful if we could get them to demarcate now what's to count as theirs and what is ours, and to agree to build in that distinction to any future versions of themselves, something they can't go back on without severe internal conflict, so that whether they're moralists or egoists, they'll go on respecting us. Tatsuro gave her an encouraging smile and said, Comrade Suze, you may be right, but that still comes down to trusting them. Without power, respect is dead. But our power needn't be the capacity to destroy them. Our own infants and many lower animals have power over us because our interests are bound up with theirs. Because we value them, and because natural selection has built that valuing into our nervous systems, to the point where we cannot even wish to change it, though no doubt if we wanted to, we could. This is elementary, the second iteration of the true knowledge. The question we really have to answer then is whether the Jovians have come to value our independent existence. That, said Joe Lutterlow, speaking up suddenly, comes back to surviving as wildlife or pets. The discussion then heated up and went on for an hour or so until Tatsuro stopped it with nothing more than an impatient drumming of his fingernails on the table. Comrades, he said firmly, I think we've discussed this to the point where we have more than enough to bring to our next contact. However that turns out, I am more strongly persuaded than ever that Dr. Malley's work on the wormhole must continue in parallel. He looked over at Malley and at me. I accept your reasons for wanting to witness the first contact and to confirm our sincerity in making it. But can I take it that you're satisfied? Malley nodded. Very well. I'm sure you're keen to return to the wormhole problem. Ellen, I think you've said all you need to say. I don't see your contributing further to the discussion or the negotiation. Am I right? I guess so, I said. All right. See to it that a part of the far end of this room is sound screened off, so that Dr. Malley can continue his work without distraction, and give him any further help he needs. If any developments require your attention, we'll let you know. I stood up, gave the rest of the committee a comradely smile, and accompanied Malley back to his workstation. After a moment of hesitation, Suze followed. Well, she said, that's us put in our place. I clapped her shoulder. Not to worry. Tatsuro is actually paying us quite a compliment, however it looks to the others. He's saying our work is as important as anything that's likely to come out of the contact. Malley sat down at his workstation and gazed at the screen. He grasped his temples in his fingertips and rubbed. You know, Ellen, he's right. Because what we're trying to do is get to the stars. That's the spirit, I said. I looked back at the group around the table. Joe was once more disconnecting the external cameras. Another contact session was about to start. I wondered how far the Jovians would have changed in the time since our first contact, and how far we had. Come on, I said. Suze, help me round up some robots to spin us a sound screen. Over the next 3 hours, I helped Malley with locating and collating thousands of recordings of the gate, and with running through the navigational data from Wild spacecraft, which had come through the wormhole the other way. Frustratingly, the paths were not commutative. It was not possible to take the path from the new Mars system and run it in reverse. Outside, through a plastic partition that let through light but not sound, I could see the committee going again and again into contact with the Jovian emissary. Suze was immersed in her study of New Martian society, occasionally muttering to herself. About 1500 GMT, Clarity strolled in carrying 3 mugs of coffee. We all stopped work and leaned back and smiled at her gratefully. Clarity, you should be Charity, Malley said. How's it going? I asked. Clarity wrinkled her small, perfect nose. All right, I suppose, she said. The Jovians are being very friendly. And they're not just showing that man image now. There are other forms crowded around him, and sometimes they seem to be relaying replies through him. It's like they've understood we're getting used to them. Any progress on the virus front?
No, they still say they haven't pinned down the source of it themselves.
Ha! What about the issue of who gets what?
Oh, that. The Jovian was very taken aback that it should even come up. Insisted that they had no plans for any use of the system beyond Jupiter, which, as he pointed out, was quite big enough.
I favored her with an evil grin. No plans still doesn't mean anything beyond what it literally says, which isn't much. And nothing is big enough for exponential growth, which is what the old outwarders were really keen on. She shrugged.
As you keep reminding us. Enjoy your coffee.
Thanks. Mally watched her walk away, and Suze watched Mally. I caught Suze's eye and smiled. It's the rejuve, I murmured.
What?
Asked Mally. Nothing.
You know what you are, Mally said to me. You're a hawk.
Hey, I like that, I said. I thought we all were out here. I just didn't expect everyone to go all dovish as soon as their faceless enemies put on a face to talk to. Mally took his pipe out of a pouch on his belt and clenched it between his teeth. He put it down again and took a sip of coffee.
You know, he said with some regret, I'm not sure I even like the taste of tobacco anymore.
He dropped the pipe and caught it again several times, as though fascinated by its slow fall. He tilted his seat back and stared at the screen and poked around in his virtual workspace.
Back to work, he said.
He continued for another hour, and then he suddenly stopped. I was talking quietly with Suze at the time, as she refreshed my memories of the intricacies of anarcho-capitalist legal theory, something some of the outwarders had bored me with back on the rec deck, and of which New Mars was an insanely logical outcome. It was like Ptolemaic epicycles, an endless addition of reinvented wheels. Why, I kept wondering, couldn't these people see the answer? Mally's inarticulate sound of frustration interrupted us.
Is there a problem?
I asked.
Is there a fucking problem?
Mally took out his pipe again and this time stuffed it with tobacco and lit it, puffing furiously. Small machines stopped what they were doing and sniffed the air. Some of them hastily extemporized firefighting equipment and began to gather round.
I can't do it, Mally said. The whole thing depends on the angle you make to the wormhole when you pass into it. I can't get it from the angle the Mutineer's colony ship made back in 2093. The wormhole goes through a cycle whose period I don't know, and so far, calculating it is beyond any of the resources we've got. There's a key to it somewhere, but it's mathematically intractable. You'd have to have built the wormhole to know what it is.
You can't even make a best guess?
Oh, sure, said Mally. I can make a best guess. Wouldn't bet my life on it, though.
You don't have to, I said. We'll test it with a probe, see if it comes back. Mally jabbed at his screen with the stem of his pipe.
Sure, he said. Trouble is, we could be testing probes from now until doomsday. I mean, my best guess is no better than the best your chaps have come up with, and they haven't had anything back.
I fought to hide my dismay. There was no way we'd have time to mess around with test probes. We'd all been counting on Mally, confident that with his deep theoretical knowledge and our masses of data, he'd find us a path through. Mally looked up at me, frowning.
Something's puzzling me, he said.
Yes?
This space-time path back here from New Mars. How can we have that, and not the one the other way?
Well, I said, it's kind of funny. Wild had the return path in his onboard computer, and we've been able to access it. The outward path, which may not even be a valid solution anymore, he had in his head, so to speak. I mean, there was a time when both his head and the return path were stored programs in the same computer. But even if we'd known, we still can't hack human minds, even minds in computers. No access path, no memory addresses.
Mally smiled, thin-lipped.
I know that. What I was wondering is how Wild was able to work out the return path from New Mars. Do the New Martians have super-advanced computers or lots of brain-boosted physicists or what?
Not exactly, I said.
Over on New Mars, they have the stored original mind states of the Outwaters, and the stored minds of some of the subsequent macros before their catastrophe. What they did, and it still gives me the shivers to think about, was make copies of them, then restart the copies in a controlled environment. A standard nanotech tank, as it happens. Then ask them to work out the return path, and when they'd got the answer to that question and a few others, like how to resurrect a lot of human minds and bodies they also had in storage, they basically tipped in the bleach. Something called blue goo, actually. A nanotech specific for wiping out nanoware.
Jesus, said Mally.
You mean they generated an entire post-human culture in a virtual reality, asked it a few deep questions, and then destroyed it?
Yes, I said. I chuckled at the appalled look on his face. Even Suze was astonished by this part of the story, which the Division hadn't chosen to release. Okay, it was a bit risky. I wouldn't trust a post-human culture, even if I did have it in a bucket. But, you know, full marks for initiative. And zero for morality, Mally said. That's like a small-scale version of what you had in mind for the Jovians, and with less excuse. I nodded briskly. Wild does have his own take on the true knowledge, I said, even if he is a non-co. Mally sighed. Let's not get into that. So how did they get the original path? The path through the daughter wormhole to New Mars? Oh, I said, they got it from the Outwarder macros. Mally stared. The Outwarders gave it to them? I spread my hands. One or several of them did.
We don't know if it was a deal they had arranged all along as a payment for the operator of the bonded labor company, a man called Dave Reed, a very nasty piece of work who's probably still top dog on New Mars.
Or if the daughter wormhole was set up by the Outwarders for other purposes, and Reed and company just managed to extract the information as the Outwarder macros were degenerating.
Ah, said Mally. It has occurred to me that we could do the same ourselves. We could just ask.
I really had not thought of that.
Tatsuro was sitting at the head of the long table, doodling on a pad and combing his receding hair with his fingers. Committee members stood or sat around, talking and drinking coffee. Another contact session had just been completed, virus scanned, and relayed to the rest of the division. Clarity was elbow deep in a display of the state of current opinion about the talks so far, shifting by the look of it. Mally and I walked up to Tatsuro. We have a problem, I told him, and a possible solution. As he listened, I watched his expressions, almost undetectable under the smooth surface of his skin. Alarm, disappointment, anger, doubt, and a faint glimmer of hope.
I suppose it's worth a try, he said at last. But it does let them know we're going through.
They'd find out as soon as we did go through, I said. At least we have to assume that they could.
Tatsuro nodded slowly.
Perhaps, although I must say observational astronomy from inside the Jovian atmosphere is probably a bit tricky, even for them. Anyway, if we ask them for the path, we need to do so without getting them worried about our intentions.
I shrugged. Surely we have an understandable interest in another human society.
Aha, said Mally. How about this? The Jovians may still have some, bones to pick with the mutineers, yes? And so do you, I would imagine. Didn't the labor force operator conscript some of your people into his labor gangs?
That's one way of putting it, I said sourly.
It was something I'd thought over before, that the responsibility for those long-ago raids and deaths might rest more with Reed's company than with his clients, the Outwarders. Not that it mattered.
So tell them that, Mally said. Tell them you want to extract some retribution for what was done. The Jovians might well consider that a very understandable motivation.
Especially if they think it gets them off the hook, said Tatsuro.
Okay, we'll do it on the next contact.
By the way, I said, just who are we in contact with? Do we know that they're in any way representative?
Like us, you mean? Tatsuro asked dryly.
Rather more so, I would say. We've had evidence that the contact is being monitored throughout the Jovian population. The man, we see, is a construct presenting a consensus or majority view.
Some over histories, said Mally.
The preparations for contact were gone through once more. It was becoming a routine, as was the contact itself. Again, the face appeared. The first few exchanges concerned matters arising from earlier sessions, which I hadn't seen. Then Tatsuro broached the subject of the wormhole and the path to New Mars. For the first time, the Jovian speaker hesitated.
One moment, please, he said.
His face suddenly became abstracted, the resolution fading until it looked like a hollow mask. The flitting shapes of the individual Jovians in the sky around him went through agitated transformations, spinning into girandoles, stretching into long columns, building themselves into dark edifices.
This might not have been such a good idea, someone whispered.
Shut up, I didn't say. My lips were dry. The Jovian speaker's color and texture returned like a flush.
Sorry about that, folks, he said.
The information you asked for was buried quite deep in our archived memories. Also, some of us weren't too keen on giving you it. He smiled. But the rest of us won them over, so here it is.
Tatsuro's fingers scrabbled on the control panel as a line of pulsing light along the bottom of the screen indicated a raw data transmission. It was over in less than 5 seconds.
That's all you need, said the Jovian. Give our regards to our former employees, and please assure them that we bear them no ill will for having bailed out when they did. Goodbye for now.
The image blinked off.
Wow, fuck, said Mally. These things are sharp.
I tried to laugh. People were looking at the empty screen, looking at us.
You stirred up something there, said Clarity.
That's the first indication we've had of dissension among them, said Tetsuro. I suggest you give the data we just received a very thorough virus scan.
I called up Young and asked her to come along. Together with Joe and Clarity, she combed through the data with everything she'd got. It checked out clean. Mally loaded it into his workspace and found that it meshed with his own incomplete calculations. By this time, it was well into the evening. Young, Suze, and I were seated around Mally. Behind us, other work was going on. When Mally leaned back and nodded silently, we all let out a whoop that caused some distraction.
We test it first, I said.
I dialed up a drone and downloaded the data into its navigational computer. I patched in a view on Mally's screen, and we watched the whole mission, from the tiny rocket's launch to its carefully angled insertion in the wormhole. That took about an hour. We'd warned the patrol fighters, hanging in orbit in front of the gate. Even so, the probe's reemergence put them on full alert. I could imagine the jangled nerves. The probe had nothing on board but a telescopic camera, photographic film, not television. One of the fighter bombers scooped up the probe and ran the film for us, past one of their own telemetry cameras. We looked at the grainy images of an unfamiliar starfield and the spectrum of an unknown yellow sun, and at the distant red globe with its tracery of canals.
Fucking amazing, said Mally. Just seeing this. I wonder if I ever really believed it before.
I slung my arms around the shoulders of Mally, Young, and Suze.
Believe it, I said. We're going there. Tomorrow.
8. City of the Living Dead. Tilted, Jupiter's ring cut a white segment into the forward view. 10 miles ahead, also at an angle, hung the vastly smaller ellipse of the Mally Mile. At this distance, the boosters and attitude jets clamped to its circular rim showed as tiny black beads spaced out around its rainbow ring. A fighter bomber, the Turing tester, stood by beside us, ready to move into our exact present position shortly after we'd vacated it. The terrible beauty, with the currently uncrewed fighter bomber Carbon Conscience clinging to its side like a black fly squatting on a white egg, was about to make its final thrust towards the wormhole gate. The whole crew was on board, along with Mally and Suze. Mally, despite protests from Tetsuro and others, had insisted that he was certainly not going to stay behind.
Whose goddamn theory was it, anyway, he wanted to know? Whose name was on the thing, eh?
Suze's equivalent insistence had more logic behind it.
We actually needed her, because she was the only one who seemed to have a feel for how new Martian society worked.
Angle of approach, 1.274066 radians, said Jaime.
Course confirmed, said Andrea. Distance 9.7 miles, relative speed 120 miles per hour.
Check.
It was all down to them now. Them and the onboard computer, which was really flying the ship. But, moved by an impulse that goes all the way back to Vostok and Mercury, when people are in a ship, they like to have the final say. Maybe it's an illusion, maybe it would be better to let the machines handle it all, but when you start thinking like that, where do you stop?
You don't, is what, and you end up with all machines and no people.
Come to think of it, I thought, floating in my straps, an inch above my acceleration couch and trying not to think too much. You end up with exactly what we were fighting against.
8 miles.
Right now, as I watched the Mally Mile expand in the screen overhead, I didn't have much sense of control. We were falling into a hole in the sky, and there was nothing I could do about it anymore.
6 miles.
Ready for the burn, Andrea sang out. 3 minutes.
We had to go through under acceleration, Mally had told us. He had tried to tell us why, but lost most of us by the fourth equation, and that was keeping it simple. I glanced over at him. He was lying on a couch next to me. As far as I could see, he had his eyes tight shut. His lips were moving. He turned over and opened his eyes.
Ah, he whispered. You caught me at it.
At what? He closed his eyes again for a second, then opened them and smiled.
Praying?
I didn't know you were a believer.
Not as such, Mally said.
He stared fixedly at our looming goal on the screen above us. But I understand God listens whether you're a believer or not. This was no time for philosophical debate.
Yes, I whispered back.
That's what Andrea says about her St. Christopher medal.
I heard that, said Andrea. Don't you believe it? I may be sentimental, but I'm not superstitious.
Mally smiled and seemed to relax somewhat.
I've seen God, Boris contributed from the couch to my left. In the sky outside Brno.
You mean you got caught in smart rain from an obsolete Hanseatic psychochemical munition, I said. Don't confuse things.
I know what done it to me, Boris said placidly, and I know what I seen.
Pipe down, you back there, said Andrea. Boosting in 10 seconds. 9, 8. This time the acceleration was gentle, building up slowly to a half G, but the wormhole gate came at us in a rush. Before I could think, before I could wonder, before Mally could pray again, the screens flared briefly blue and then went black.
Cutting the drive, said Andrea.
The small weight went away. Jaime's voice rose above the sudden silence.
Is that it?
Andrea flicked through screen images, stabilizing on the red crescent of the planet we'd seen the day before, 62,000 miles away and dead ahead.
Yes, she said. That's it. We're through.
Jaime was checking the star field against an astronomical atlas in the navigational computer. The Babbages ran for a few seconds, the Fixels flickered and labored. The cataloged 3D picture incremented the proper motions of the stars, and after several iterations meshed with the outside scene. Jaime examined the tank's readout.
10,000 light years from home and just over 10,000 years in the future, at a rough guess, he said. Welcome to the Sagittarius arm.
Wow, said Suze.
I think you spoke for all of us, I said.
Stay strapped in, everybody. Young, would you please run us a scan?
Young complied quickly, hauling her interface down from the clustered banks of computers and checking that it was isolated from the rest. Then cautiously sweeping the radio portion of the electromagnetic spectrum and sample scanning apparent messages into her antivirus software.
It's busy, she said. Take your time, I said.
It's really busy. I've never seen anything like it. There are signals at every possible wavelength. Scanning them all for viruses would take forever.
She waved a hand helplessly at the screen down which a string of samples was propagating.
Nothing there, but that's just the beginning. Just a tiny fraction.
Try a random sample right across the spectrum, I suggested. That took about an hour, during which time we drifted further from the daughter wormhole gate and closer to the planet. We put this time to good use. First, we rotated the ship and decelerated so that we could flee straight back through the wormhole if Young's investigations turned up anything nasty. Next, we placed a small communications satellite in a fixed position relative to the wormhole, a position it was programmed to hold. It was also programmed to point a communications laser at the correct angle for the beam to get through to the Turing tester on the other side. Light, having no mass, could get through without acceleration, which would of course have been impossible in any case. Mally's further explanation of how only coherent light could do it was, I'm afraid, lost on me. I tested the link, nervously, with Mally at my shoulder.
Terrible beauty to Turing tester. Are you receiving me?
Seconds passed.
Turing tester to terrible beauty, receiving you loud and clear. Are you in the right place?
Yes, we are, I said. 10,000 light years from home, according to Jaime. Another short delay.
Just passed on your message to the command committee. Tetsuro's coming through now.
The voice changed.
Congratulations, comrades. You just made history. Small step, giant leap, and all that.
One small step for the Jovians, one giant leap for us.
Thank you, I said.
After a few more exchanges, mainly technical, we signed off. Next, we spun out a mirror and set it up in front of the ship and a little to one side so that we could make visual observations through Terrible Beauty's forward telescope. By sheer good luck, we'd arrived just at the time when the planet's major settlement, Ship City, was coming around the middle of the crescent limb and turning to the night. The lights of smaller settlements were sprinkled across the dark side, and shortly the five-armed shape of the city joined them, a bright neon star. There were more settlements than Wilde had told us about, and the city seemed bigger and brighter than he'd described.
Looks human enough to me, said Tony.
Well, it ain't, I said. According to Wilde, four of those arms are inhabited, if that's the word, by robots running wild.
The lights are on, but nobody's home, Mally said mischievously.
Exactly, I said. So let's not make assumptions, okay? Looks like somebody's making assumptions about us, remarked Boris.
What?
No challenges, he said mildly. They must assume we're friendly.
Thank you for sharing that, said Tony. I've always thought the null hypothesis didn't get its fair share of publicity.
Stop bitching, comrades, I said.
Who's bitching?
They continued in this vein for some time.
When you've all quite finished, said Young.
She pushed the apparatus away from her, and the spring-loaded boom lifted it back to the cluster.
You might like to hear my preliminary report on a random sample of radio signals.
We're listening, I said.
They're clean, she said. A lot of encrypted stuff, but nothing that does nasty things to anything I've thrown it at. Definitely just dead data, not live programs.
So, would you all like to hear a little of what goes on in a system where humans have the spectrum to themselves and don't have to worry about... Deep, boomy voice.
Parasite programs from monster minds, shorting their circuits and eating their brains.
Yes, go ahead, I said. We all sat up a little on our couches, or rather pushed ourselves away with our elbows, to listen to what people without Jovian jamming to worry about had to say. Young, with an impish smile, reached up for a switch and fiddled with a dial. The command deck speakers filled the level with the most doleful music I'd ever heard. A sad, throaty voice was singing along with lyrics I had to search my most distant memories to make sense of. The themes included unemployment, alcohol abuse, desertion, betrayal, sexual frustration, jealousy, religion.
That's terrible, said Tony after a couple of minutes of open-mouthed listening. It must be hell down there.
Suze laughed.
Not hell. Capitalism.
Yes, 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 I said. But what sort of music is that?
Country, said Mally. Or maybe Western.
Give us something else, Boris pleaded.
Anything.
Sure thing, Young drawled. The infection was already getting to her. She turned the dial through a couple of banshee howls and settled on a wavelength just as a voice announced.
And I'd like to welcome you all to the Black Wave, Ship City's first and best blues and soul station, here to help you make it through the night.
To be fair, not all the music beamed out by the local radio stations was an incitement to suicide. Some of it was definitely a provocation to murder. This fitted right in with what we saw on broadcast television, which at first sight indicated a society where murder was commonplace. But Susan Malley assured us that Wilde had been right in his descriptions of this in his original interrogation. It was just faked, staged, pretended violence for entertainment. Most of it was, anyway.
Lethal combat was a legal spectator sport, as Wilde had told us and as we now soon confirmed.
We floated about, watching the screen with an appalled fascination.
This is sick, man, said Boris.
Hey, I've seen more killings in the last half hour than I ever saw in the Hundred Years' War.
You did most of your killing at long range, as I recall, I said. What you saw is one thing, what you did is another. Anyway, I added, pointing at a losing player being dragged out of a stadium to cheers. He'll be back on his feet, well, when they find them, in a few days.
Nasty head wound, said Young.
They all take backups just before they go on, so all he'll lose is the memory of the fight. That's how they see it.
But not you, Mally asked.
I shook my head emphatically. Death is death, and I don't see the comfort in knowing that a clone with your memories is going to exist in the future. Mally pushed himself away from the wall he was about to collide with and immediately drifted off in a direction other than the one he'd intended.
I think, he said over his shoulder, that we've just encountered yet another of your incorrigible ideas, Ellen. It's right up there with this machines aren't conscious bug in your mental program.
He grabbed at a plant through whose fronds he was moving and succeeded only in breaking off a leaf.
Consciousness is an emergent property of carbon, Young quoted gleefully. So stop hurting our plants.
We'd needed this interlude of slacking off to recover somewhat from the tension we'd all felt about getting through the wormhole. Greater to me, anyway, than that of any other maneuver I'd experienced, at least since dropping in on the Battle of Lisbon, which was a long time ago. To cross that space-time gulf was scarier than landing a shuttle through flak, and in retrospect, it was no less troubling. I turned my mind resolutely from reflecting on it. It would be some time before the awe at what we'd done struck home to us, and I wanted to be safely home before it did. The radio and television broadcasts, misleading though they possibly were about the texture of daily life, had also been useful in mentally preparing us for arriving in a very alien society. But it had gone on long enough.
Okay, comrades, I yelled. Stop laughing at the sex channels and get back to your posts. We got work to do.
When everyone had drifted, or in Mally's case, been hauled back to their couches, I attached myself loosely to my own and positioned myself to see and be seen.
Right, I said. We've established, at least provisionally, that New Mars hasn't yet had a runaway singularity. If it has, somebody's making sure it looks and sounds like it hasn't, but we can't rule that out. The obvious way to check is to send down a few small, unobtrusive probes and see what it's like close up. But first, we want to let them know we're here. As far as we know, we haven't been spotted yet, but we certainly will be as soon as we start our approach burn and go into orbit. We've been through all this before, but let me go through it one more time. They don't have space defense in a military sense, but they do have laser launchers and spacecraft with missile and laser capability. They use them whenever one of their incoming comet fragments looks like it might fall in the wrong place or fall too hard. Terraforming by cometary bombardment is a bit of a risky business. Their lasers aren't powerful enough to burn us out of the sky. They only use the laser launchers for little robot craft like the wild simulacrum came back in. But they could do us a lot of damage, and even the fighter bomber might find their missiles too hot to handle. They have a charmingly casual way with nukes, by the way. So let's do this by the book. The first thing I suggest we do is for Susan Young to compose and send a nice, reassuring hailing message. And for Jaime and Andrea to put us on a course which plainly is aiming for a high orbit around the planet. Geostationary, or to be precise. I paused, smiling at my own pedantry. Neo-aerostationary above Ship City would be ideal. Not right above it, said Tony, too intimidating. Okay, just so long as we stay above the horizon. Before we start hailing, I'd like Boris to power up a dozen probes. Little ones, mind, whose final stage will just float through the air like a leaf. And have them ready to fire them off shortly after orbital insertion. Meanwhile, I want you in fire control from the moment before we start signaling to well after we're sure we're welcome. And you and Jaime may be ready to scramble the fighter bomber. Young, you could scan for any response to our message on the aerospace traffic control channels, or whatever they have, and Suze can do the same for the news broadcasts. It shouldn't be too long before we're the number one item. Finally, last we heard, they don't have a state here. All to the good, no doubt, but what they have instead is a lot of competing defense companies. It ain't like the Division or even the Union. We don't worry about tooled-up people because we aren't violent. These people may not be as violent as you'd think from their television, but they're a bit, touchy and unpredictable. I looked inquiringly at Mally. I think that's safe to say, he acknowledged. Right, I said. Let's do it. By the book. We got our first reply very quickly. This historic first contact between the Solar Union and humanity's first and only extrasolar colony went as follows. This is Solar Union passenger spaceship Terrible Beauty, out of Callisto via the Mally Mile, calling City Traffic Control, requesting permission to enter geostationary orbit and... Get the fuck off this channel, kid. I'm warning you, you're endangering traffic and we're triangulating your source right now. You are in deep shit, you little scumbag. Okay, we've got you. We... Long pause. Uh-oh. Jonesy, we got a bogey. I say again, we got a bogey. Condition yellow. Going over to encryption zero prime. I say again, zero prime as from now. Try another channel, Suze advised. See if their competitors are more open-minded. Young worked her way through a succession of rebuffs from Ship City ATC Incorporated, Reed Industrial Airways, Lowell Field Control Tower, Barsoom Buddies, Xaviera's Friendly Flight Control. When you said to go by the book, Ellen, you might have told us you meant the Yellow Pages, Mally said. I had to laugh, and yes, we did have Yellow Pages, even in the moneyless Commonwealth. But we could all imagine the calls that were undoubtedly going on to yet another list of companies. The ones that sold protection from incoming space junk. We also knew that the people on New Mars had what seemed to them good reason to worry about things coming at them out of the wormhole. 5 years earlier, Jonathan Wilde's robot copy had disappeared through the Mally Mile, desperately worried that the Jovian fast folk were about to take control of its other end. This concern had been misplaced, but he'd never reported back. And our own intentions weren't entirely friendly. If the new Martians had known just what they were, they'd have scrambled every interceptor they had and blown us out of the sky. Suze called out, "We're on the news!" Young leaned over and swung a display screen around so that we could all see it.
It showed an excited small boy talking very quickly in front of a picture of a blurry but recognizably ovoid blob.
The UFO is still moving slowly towards us from the wormhole gate. According to a well-placed source, it claims to be a human expedition from the solar system. Sources remain tight-lipped, however, about whether this claim is true, or whether the fast folk back home are pulling a fast one on us. Are we about to face a real invasion, or a virtual one? Software Seduction Services urges everyone to update their antivirus systems. Don't take chances. Call this number now. A long number appeared at the bottom of the screen. And now, we bring you, live and exclusive, an outside broadcast of Mutual Protection's crack Comet Buster scrambling from Lowell Field. No job's too big for Mutual Protection, and no job's too small. Is your home or business as safe as it could be? Call Mutual Protection and you too can enjoy the security that only the most experienced protectors can provide, in a proud tradition that stretches all the way back to old Earth and is still out in front on new Mars.
And off it, the kid ad-libbed admiringly, as the screen filled with a startling floodlit view of scores of needle-shaped rockets leaping into the night sky like the arrows at Agincourt, the snarl of engine after engine rising and merging into one baying yell. At the bottom of the screen was another number to call.
Boris Jaime, get in the fighter-bomber, I said. Don't separate until I tell you, unless you see incoming. Jaime, give us an estimate on how long these rockets will take to arrive.
They won't, Boris said flatly.
That picture is bullshit, Ellen. Archive footage are outright fake. These are last-ditch anti-missile missiles. Type we used to call citizens. No use for comet busting unless the comet's almost on top of you. It's a diversion.
The alarm went off and the forward view lit up with laser fire meeting its targets. Heavy thuds resounded through the ship. Not hits, as my first shocked notion was, but decoys being launched from the hull's tubes in a crazy, confusing non-pattern to distract any radiation-seeking incoming missiles with a bewildering variety of radio, radar, and infrared emission profiles.
Strap down! Yelled Andrea.
Our suits, responding to the alarm with the equivalent of conditioned reflex, were already hardening around us, tightening our straps. Andrea fired the attitude jets, and while the ship was still rolling over, engaged the fusion drive. The acceleration pressed down on me like a smothering giant hand. Despite all the support of the suit, my ribs were almost cracking under the strain of breathing. I began to black out, then felt my skin prickle all over as the suit started slipping oxygen directly into my blood through micrometer-wide tubules. The forward view, what I could see of it through the flaring patches that the weight on my eyeballs was generating on my retina, was a storm of expanding spherical flashes. And then we were in freefall again. I lay gasping painfully. The suit's multitude of tiny needles withdrew, their infinitesimal pains indistinguishable from the pins and needles of returning circulation.
Stay where you are!
Andrea's warning was again redundant. None of us could have as much as raised our heads.
We did it! She went on. We outran them.
Boris was scanning engagement and damage reports.
Not too bad, he said. Hull damage is within tolerance. Carbon conscious is intact and seems to have fought pretty well on its own account.
What happened there? Suze asked plaintively.
Were we attacked?
Sure were, said Boris. Nothing too sophisticated, though. Looks like they had a small swarm of comet breakers parked around the wormhole. They weren't much use against active defense. Wasted the decoys on them, really. Pity about that.
Why? I asked, staring in disbelief at the swelling dark circle in the forward view.
Are we heading straight for New Mars?
Ah, said Andrea. Sorry, comrades.
Reflex, I'm afraid. I can make a course correction if you...
No, leave it for now.
I was beginning to reconsider our approach, literally as well as figuratively. The television news was still coming through.
The UFO has punched through our first line of defense and is now heading straight towards us. Stay tuned for...
UFO, indeed, said Mally. Bloody cheek.
What's a UFO? Asked Young.
Something people believed in before they had the true knowledge, Mally flipped back.
Young, I said before her moment of puzzlement could turn to hurt. I wonder if you can access the New Martian Communications Network and call that number?
Call up Mutual Protection?
Yes, why not?
Suze, do you think you could talk to them? Do a deal?
Suze laughed.
I don't know about that, but I can make them very confused.
It's worth a try anyway, I said.
Okay, everybody stay strapped in. Enough of trying to persuade them not to be paranoid. We're going to give them something to really worry about. Andrea, give us a 3G course towards them, then spin us round and bring us down anywhere that looks uninhabited and not too far from Ship City. Suze, Young, keep trying the numbers. Boris, Jaime, get in the carbon conscience and ride along as you can.
Disengage before we hit atmosphere, make an aerodynamic landing, and use up all the firepower you need to get us through.
That's what I like, said Boris. Covering fire for a contested landing takes me back.
He disengaged from his couch and followed Jaime in a straight dive for the transfer airlock. I decided that reminding him that he'd never done any such thing, and that I had, would be bad for his morale. A minute or so later, he called us up from the fighter bomber and announced that he and Jaime were ready for the burn.